2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning. Welcome back to the KSL Greenhouse Show. Clouds are moving in, Ton. I love fall. It just doesn't last long enough. I love crunching around in the leaves. I love just the crisp temperatures, but it just doesn't last long enough.
No, it doesn't. And it's about this time of year that I'm thinking, I love the show and I would never give this up, but there's something to be said for living in San Diego for the winter.
No doubt about it. Where the temperature is about the same year
and
round.
I don't even mind the colder temperatures, but when we have snow and I have to drive through it, I'm a wimpy person. That's when I'm like, man, Mesquite, San Diego, Houston, any of those places would be great. But I love the show. I love talking to our listeners. And even during the winter, there's just so many things.
Are you telling me something I need to know here, Tom?
No, unless we could somehow work the show from San Diego regularly.
That's a thought. Maybe we can work on that. Make a deal with the Disneyland or some weird thing. I'm just teasing.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us for the show today. We're taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Let's take a call now from Craig, who has been waiting. Craig's in Harriman. Good morning. What is your question?
Thank you. I have a beautiful row of columnar oaks, a weeping spruce, and another tree. And I've noticed that there's a pattern where the water spray from the sprinklers, it seems to burn and destroy the leaves. And, the columnar oak that's not, I have about five of them, but there's one that's, not in the spray pattern at all. It's beautiful and green. And then the other ones, the leaf rot or the crinkling kind of follows that up and above there. And it seems to be impairing the growth of the trees. My question is, it's clearly related to the water. Maybe there's a fungus. Do I have to actually change my sprinklers, which would be a major expense, or is there anything I can spray on the trees to protect it from?
No, there's not.
Water?
Because you could have a couple things going on. One, you could be actually getting, if there's drops on the tree of water that on the leaves that actually act as a natural magnifying glass, and they could be scorching that way. Or you could be getting a fungal disease on those leaves that are taking them out. And at $20 a week for fungicide and then having the fungi become resistant, it's just not the way to go forward. And fortunately, if you want trees in those locations, adjusting the sprinkling system is going to be the long-term solution.
Okay. That's all I wanted to know.
Now, there's just nothing you can spray on there that would be a permanent solution.
Yeah, I don't think it's the magnifying because I only water it at night around 8 p.m.
Okay, then it may be. Is the spray pretty high pressure hitting the trees?
No, it's just I have the columnar oaks pretty close to the lawn.
Okay.
And then a couple of the trees are just close enough that there's the overspray from the sprinklers.
Yeah, and so if you could somehow shoot the sprinklers from near the trunk out away from the tree so that you didn't get so much water on the foliage, it would be the solution.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for your call. We have Susan texting from Cottonwood Heights. Says she has a Carl Forrester grass in a large pot on the east side of her house. And she says online, if you look at it, it says leave it over the winter, cut it off in February before the new growth starts. But she says the businesses around her house have already cut theirs off. What do you recommend?
That's because the lawn maintenance companies have to get it done because they have a schedule to maintain.
Okay.
So if you have that in a pot, the other part of this is there's a chance that it may not overwinter outside. Because we're not in an area where the soil stays thawed.
Right.
And so she may want to cut it down after another month or so and just move it into the garage so that the soil doesn't freeze, and water it monthly and then put it back out in the spring.
Just needed, yeah. Okay. And then our next texter wants words of encouragement. Their lawn has been decimated by necrotic ring spot. Any words of encouragement for them?
Well, it's, there's a lot of different things you can do, and none of them are short-term and easy. The necrotic ring spot, after a couple of years, if you've used the fungicides, if you've tried the fertilization techniques and it just isn't working, that's when in the spring you aerate very heavily and you're pulling the plugs out. Mm-hmm. And then you get either turf type tall fescue or perennial ryegrass. Both of them look like Kentucky blue, and you start top dressing with them, and you do that spring and fall for a couple of years, because the rye and the fescue is either going to be highly resistant or immune to necrotic ring spot. That's one way to renovate the lawn without totally killing it. But after a couple of years and hundreds of dollars on chemicals and fertilizers and everything else, it's a longer term solution, but I just tell people to start to top dress.
Right. Okay, let's go to Joanne in Riverton. Good morning. What is your question?
Yes. I have a maple tree that is about 15 years old now. It has rings around it, but about 5 years ago, a company from our company hired a company to trim the trees. When I got home, I felt our tree had been massacred. Our tree was one of the most beautiful trees around, and very large, beautiful green leaves. Since the cutting, we have, like, they cut a large bottom main branch, and they cut medium ones, they cut small ones, and it was a mess. And since then, our tree has smaller leaves. They're kind of a lighter green. All the other maples around here have doubled in size, and they have the large leaves. Ours is this smaller tree now. And I was wondering if the cutting had anything to do with that.
Maybe. It very well could have, because it cut off all the energy producing portions of the tree, and the tree's trying to regenerate from energy stores.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't know that in and of itself that will kill the tree unless it was already stressed. Now, sometimes you don't know it's stressed because there's no visible symptoms, but it could have been. But in and of itself, if that's a one-time isolated event, it won't kill the tree, but the longer-term problem is going to be that a lot of those branches that grow back are going to have weak branch angles, and so it's going to make the tree more susceptible to breaking in windstorms and snowstorms and things.
Uh-huh. So the tree's probably going to stay about what it is then.
No, it's not going to stay small. It'll just form what are called witch's brooms, and you'll have 10 or 15 branches come out in the same spot, and it'll try to regrow from those. And so over time, you're going to need to find a qualified arborist to help retrain it so that you don't have it split out on you.
Okay. To retrain, is there anything I can put on the tree that will help?
A chainsaw. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean here. Sometimes I blurt things out before thinking it through, but I mean, it's going to be several years of effort, and if you don't want to go through that, it may just be easier to plant a new tree.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
All right. Thank you, Joanne. Don't be alarmed by his chainsaw comment.
A pruning cut at the base.
It's okay.
Thanks for listening. Next texter wants to know, you talked about this earlier in the show, but whether they can use ground up leaves as a soil amendment in their garden.
Absolutely. The only cautions I have are if you have black walnut, especially, maybe even English walnut, those sometimes can prevent some plant families from germinating from seed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Otherwise, use those leaves. Grass clippings, you can have caution about if you've recently put a weed killer down on your lawn. You don't want to put those into the compost or till them in during cool weather. But 99% of those leaves out there, mow them up so that they're easier to turn into the soil. But a good 3 or 4 inches of leaves on the garden turned in is always good to do.
All right. Dennis is on the line in Provo. Dennis, what is your question this morning? Good morning, Dennis. What is your question? Okay, I'm wondering is this Randy?
Randy?
Hi, Randy. Good morning. What is your question?
I'm seeking some advice on fruit trees. I'd like to plant a pear and a peach, but they won't have other trees with them. So I'm looking for something that doesn't need a companion tree to pollinate. And also I'm wondering, is this the time of year to be planting a fruit tree, or should I wait until spring?
If you can find them, plant them. Bartlett pear is semi-self-pollinating, and there's so many other ornamental pears around that pollination generally isn't a problem. And then about 90% of the peaches that you would buy at a store are also self-pollinating. And so the one to avoid is Hell's Best. And that one you need a cross-pollinator. But again, there's so many peach trees around that it probably would get at least reasonable pollination. In both situations, I think that you'll get fruit.
Okay, what about the difference between like a Shinseki and a Bartlett?
Bartlett's a European pear, and Shinseki's an Asian pear. The Shinseki is going to be ripe right off the tree, and the Bartletts are going to need to rest a little bit, and you're going to pick them a little bit. They're going to be mature, but not ripe. And so what you're going to do is just let them sit in a cool room and then bring them to 70 degrees and let them sit to ripen inside. Otherwise, they get a really grainy texture.
Okay.
Now, if you do another pear other than Bartlett, those are called winter pears, and you actually put them in the fridge for a month to 6 weeks. And then after they've had that rest period in the fridge, pull them out and put them at room temperature, and they'll ripen normally. But you do not let European, so the oval pears, you do not let those ripen on the tree and then pick them off.
Oh, okay. So if I wanted tree pears, I'd get the Shinseki.
Okay, then let it ripen on the tree, and then they'll store for several weeks at near freezing. And that one, I believe, will be pollinated by another European. But to be safe, if you don't see any fruit after 3 or 4 years, you may have to put in something like 20th Century or another Asian pear of a different variety.
Okay. So you think that this is a good time to plant fruit trees?
If you can find them.
Okay. All right.
All right. Randy, thank you so much for your call. The number to call if you have a question, 801-575-8255. We're going to take a break. You can also text us your questions at 57500. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome back to the KSL Greenhouse Show. We've just had a really great time today talking about all of your questions, and also we did some specialty program on Facebook Live this morning. We put together some very creative succulent pumpkins, centerpieces.
That will last.
That will last for I wanted to say forever, unfortunately not.
But
they'll last
weeks.
For a couple of months.
Yeah. So we did not carve them.
No.
We've been talking about alternatives to carving today. Mm-hmm. And these look really nice. They'll be useful for Halloween and Thanksgiving, and should, as long as they're taken care of, last that long. And then you can reuse the succulents later.
Right. You just pull the moss off the top and you can reuse them in another planter now. So go to the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, and you can see the live Facebook video that we did, and you can get all of those wonderful tips. And I just love the fact that they'll last so long. They'll last you through Thanksgiving, which is pretty awesome.
It is. And to be able to get those done now instead of at Thanksgiving, especially if you're hosting family.
For sure, right.
That's just, it's just that much less stress you're dealing with not trying to do those the day of Thanksgiving.
Right. Now, we would also love to see your wonderful creations. You can share them with us on Facebook Messenger. Just send us a message, and we'll create an album with your wonderful masterpieces.
It would be fun to do. We're taking the show in slightly new directions, but they're great directions, and we would love to have your input and your feedback on not only that, but we just want to see your pumpkins.
Yeah, for sure we do. So please do that. And I think you'll enjoy that video as well. Let's go to Rich in Farmington. Good morning, Rich. What is your question?
Yes, I planted two pine trees on either side of my front porch when we built our home. And for the first half a dozen years, they grew at equal rate and were flourishing. All of a sudden, I've noticed that one side is still very vibrant and healthy. The other side is starting to look like it's dying off. They get equal amounts of water, and I've even added a little fertilizer to the one that's ailing over the last couple of years, but it seems to be slowing down. I'm just wondering if there's anything that can be done or if that's a lost cause.
Well, there could be several things slowing it down. Some common ones are girdling roots that you may have had some circled roots when you planted them from the pot, and they're starting to choke off a portion of the root system. Some other ones is the one that's struggling may have gotten a root disease that is slowly killing it over a period of a number of years. And so for me to just say, this is it, I can't, because yellow needles are just a sign that something is wrong, oftentimes in the roots, and to find out what's going on is difficult. So if you put some fertilizer down and it didn't green up, that's not a good sign. You could try putting a little more fertilizer down in late March and see what the new candles look like on that tree. And if the new candles come out dark green, then, it may have been a nutrient deficiency, but I would more suspect that there's either girdled roots or a root disease in there, and that there's not going to be much you can do to salvage it if the fertilizer doesn't work. Now, it is definitely worth looking at the trunk to make sure there's no twine around the trunk, or if there's any roots above ground that look like they might be choking the trunk off. You do need to check those things. If it's not anything like that, then there is most likely not much you can do.
So subterranean, there's nothing that can be done to fix it.
A lot of times, to find out what's going on, you actually have to do what's called destructive harvest to actually analyze the tree.
Right.
And so, but if it has a root disease, there isn't a fungicide available that will actually cure that. The fungicides are usually preventative and not curative, especially in root situations.
So if I wanted to try to preserve the tree that's healthy and vibrant, and it's a dozen years old, is it safe to try to transplant that so I can...
Not really.
...on either side of the...
No, because those roots are going to be everywhere, and it would cost you more to commercially move it than it would be just to buy a new tree. And so the other tree may just be fine. The other one could have already been stressed when it was planted, and it succumbed to whatever, and the new one is more healthy. But to dig that other tree up would actually make it a lot more susceptible to getting a fungal disease in the roots and dying.
So just have a lopsided porch then.
Well, that's sometimes the problem when we put little soldiers lined up the same on either side. One of them has a chance of being susceptible. And so if you had to take the other one out to balance the look, you definitely could try retransplanting it. But just to protect the tree, I wouldn't do that. But if it's more to maintain the look of the landscape, that's a different reason.
Yeah, that's all it is, just to try to balance out the front of the house.
I've given up. The right side does not grow the same as the left side, and I can't get the same things to grow. It's really frustrating. It's, 4 feet apart, like just across my steps, right? And I've given up.
There is. It might be that you could find some hardscape features, whether it were a little fountain or something, that was going to be more permanent. but or try to get something balanced farther out from the house that wasn't so obvious. But that's just when you have a formal landscape style and you have formal hedges and things like that, if one dies in the middle or on the side, that's a problem. And every once in a while, you can find a new tree that's close to the shape, but you can pay hundreds of dollars. And so I would look at, if it's a conifer, up in Willard, there's a place called Alpine Gardens right next to Maddox Steakhouse. Go eat and see if they have anything. Sometimes the larger garden centers have those available too.
Okay. Well, all right. Thanks so much for your help.
Thank you, Rich. I don't know what to do. I'm lopsided in my front yard. I've tried, several times, and I will continue to try, but I just can't find the right combination of things that will both work on each side of the sidewalk.
One thing I've recommended people do is that it costs a little bit of money, but in the spring, you can find the tropicals like the Mandevilla or Bougainvillea that flower all summer. And so I'll tell people to just pot them up in ornamental pots and put them on either side of the porch and just count on replacing them in the spring.
I have Daphne bushes on each side right now. And even those, I mean, those, that's not what I'm talking about. They're a little bit farther away, but even those don't look the same.
But those,
even though I've tried to prune,
don't
them.
Do anything because they're treasures.
Oh, but they're getting huge.
Yeah.
Spring pruning though, right?
Limited. It's almost like if you say boo to them, sometimes they can just decline.
Oh, you've got to come see them.
They're such treasures.
They really are. Thank you for joining us for the Greenhouse Show. Make sure you go to our Facebook page and check out our live video this morning. And we'll see you again next week. Have a great weekend.